Hello, and welcome to Words of Wisdom, a podcast dedicated to reflecting on the wisdom of the Book of Proverbs. Your host is Dr. Jerry Weirwool, who will share life-giving truth from Proverbs that will help us become wise and discerning. Wisdom is a journey, and we hope you will join us for this exciting adventure.
Proverbs chapter 2, verses 1 through 5 says, "My son, if you receive my words and store up my commandments with you, making your ear attentive to wisdom, directing your heart to discernment. For if you call out to understanding, if you raise your voice to discernment, if you seek her like silver and search for her like hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of Yahweh, and you will find the knowledge of God." Here at the beginning of chapter 2, we see Solomon appealing to his son for him to seek wisdom. The entirety of Proverbs chapter 2 is one long discourse about the need to obtain wisdom and why wisdom is so precious and valuable. In fact, verses 1 through 22 in the Hebrew text form one long complex sentence, but structurally and logically, it can be divided into two equal halves, verses 1 through 11 and 12 through 22. Nevertheless, for ease of reading, chapter 2 is often broken up into several sentences in modern English translations. The point of the first section, which is comprised of verses 1 through 5, is to motivate the son to actively pursue wisdom with persistence and passion. If he does this, Solomon says he will discover the fear of Yahweh, along with all the practical and ethical instruction that comes with it. Verses 1 through 5 consist of a series of conditional statements that then culminate in one climactic outcome. It goes like this: if you receive, if you call out, if you raise your voice, if you seek and search, then you will understand and find. This series of statements is meant to build the degree of desire one must have for wisdom. Solomon's son is not to seek wisdom half-heartedly or with mild interest and effort, but rather with fervent resolve and determination. Solomon makes it clear at the outset that his words and commandments are of utmost importance for his son. He tells his son that he wants him to receive my words and store up my commandments with you. The Hebrew word translated store up literally means take in. The idea that is being conveyed is of the son receiving and taking into himself the words and commandments of his father, like gathering up treasure and placing it in a secure place. Furthermore, the phrase store up my commandments with you indicates the notion that the son is to have the father's commandments in his company at all times, wherever he goes, being reminded of them often, ready to consult them, and even be in dialogue with them, like a trusted friend going on a journey with him. But Solomon's words and commandments are not only meant to lead his son toward finding wisdom, but they are themselves part of wisdom. However, they aren't simply a set of rules for the son to follow in the way that some might think when they hear the word commandments. But rather, the Hebrew word translated commandments, it refers to precepts, which are binding principles or decreed ways one must live. And so they are not just suggestions and advice. And while we could say that they are rules by which one must live in order to be wise, it is too simplistic to leave it at that, because the intent behind the Father's commandments are to be helpful and to provide training and guidance, not just a list of do's and don'ts. Moreover, the primary purpose of the Father's commandments is not to be restrictive in a negative sense, but to establish proper boundaries and ways of living that align with wisdom. Therefore, Solomon's words and commandments are the basis of necessary teaching and instruction for the proper development of his son's moral and godly character. They constitute part of what it means to be wise, but even more so, they point the son towards seeing the need to attain the prize goal of having wisdom in life. The importance of the son receiving his father's commandments cannot be overemphasized. It is a recurring theme in Proverbs chapters 1 through 10. For example, in Proverbs 3, verse 1, it says, "My son, Do not forget my instruction, and let your heart guard my commandments. In chapter 6, verse 20, it says, My son, keep your father's commandments, and do not ignore the instruction of your mother. In chapter 7, verses 1 and 2, it says, My son, keep my words and store up my commandments with you. Keep my commandments and live, and my instruction as the pupil of your eye. And in chapter 10, verse 8, it says, The wise heart accepts commandments. Expanding further upon the way that the son will receive and store up his father's words and commandments, verse 2 states that this is done by the son making his ear attentive to wisdom and directing his heart to discernment. Making your ear attentive means paying attention with the result of obedience to what is heard. It is more than merely listening, for it constitutes accompanying action in accordance with what is heard. And the phrase directing your heart literally means turning your heart. This is an idiomatic phrase that describes desiring or yielding to something. The father's exhortation is for his son to desire in his heart the wisdom, discernment, and understanding that he is imparting through his words and commandments. And therefore, the son must make his ear attentive and direct his heart toward them if he is to receive them. This describes an internal posture of the heart and mind toward being humble and impressionable, willing to learn how to be wise. Next, in verse 3, the father lists two more criteria in the actions that his son must take toward finding wisdom. His son must call out and raise his voice to understanding and discernment, where understanding and discernment are terms that are related to and interchangeable often with wisdom. Here we see the father escalate the requirements in the son's pursuit of wisdom. It's not only necessary for the son to be open to receiving wisdom, but he must take action and pursue wisdom by calling out and raising his voice as though he was summoning her to his side. Desire alone is insufficient for attaining wisdom. The son must also take the initiative and actively call wisdom to come to him and teach him. This figurative imagery is personifying wisdom as a female character that the son can call out to and talk to and thus learn from as a student does with their teacher. Finally, the last condition that the father gives to his son deals with his persistence and determination to attain wisdom. In verse 4, the son is encouraged to seek wisdom like silver and to search for her like hidden treasure. Both lines are roughly synonymous in their meaning, even though the second line appears to add intensification and broadening of scope. Nevertheless, they both function to stipulate the extent to which the son is to exert himself toward finding wisdom. The degree of exertion for attaining wisdom is paralleled with the way that a person will seek after precious metals and gems. People are willing to go to great lengths to obtain treasure. And so the father is likening the degree of persistence and determination his son must have for finding wisdom to how people are so persistent and determined in their pursuit of physical wealth and objects of great value. Even beyond hearing, having the desire, and calling out to wisdom, the son must diligently pursue her as a treasure and something of incredible value in order to find her. Now, at last, we come to the concluding statement that brings to a point all the preceding conditions that the father has listed in order for his son to find wisdom. If his son will make his ear attentive and direct his heart, if he will call out and raise his voice, if he will seek her and search for her, then the father says, "You will understand the fear of Yahweh, and you will find the knowledge of God." The result of such fervent pursuit of wisdom will be coming to know the fear of Yahweh and finding the knowledge of God. All true knowledge, that is, knowledge leading to life, has its origin in the fear of Yahweh. The Hebrew word for fear can mean to be afraid, like to be terrified, but it can also mean to have reverence for God. Having the fear of Yahweh means living with the awareness and mindfulness of the reality of Yahweh's rule over all creation, which includes his authority and power to not only govern the universe and all things that happen within the cosmos, but also as the owner of all truth and understanding about life. Yahweh is the source of all knowledge, and no right understanding about how to best live can be attained apart from him. The beginning of the knowledge of God consists of acknowledging and giving this due recognition to Yahweh as the Almighty Creator of heaven and earth, as the one from whom all things exist, and the one who alone is truly wise. Only when we live in the fear of Yahweh can we begin to have the knowledge of God. For only when our hearts are properly oriented toward Yahweh will we be able to receive his wise instruction and learn how to properly live as he intended for us to. In order to illustrate this proverb, I want to tell you a story about Howard Carter. Carter was born in the late 19th century in England. He grew up in a large home as the youngest of 11 kids. Unfortunately, Carter didn't receive much formal education. But early on in his childhood, he showed talent as an artist. When he was 17 years old, he was hired by Lady Amherst, who was impressed with his artistic skills, and he accompanied Percy Newberry, a family friend and Egyptologist, to assist in the excavation and recording of tombs recently discovered at a place called Beni Hassan in Egypt. While he was at the site in Egypt, Carter showed exceptional potential for understanding Egyptian tombs. He even developed an improved method for recording tomb decorations. And so he went on the following year to work at another site in Amarna for a season. And then after that, he worked for 5 years with another archaeologist at Deir el-Bahari in the west bank of the Nile, where he recorded the wall reliefs in the temple of Hatshepsut. Then in 1899, at age 25, Carter was appointed the Inspector of Monuments for Upper Egypt by the Egyptian Antiquities Service. Specifically, he oversaw a number of excavations in what is known as the Valley of the Kings on the west bank of the Nile, opposite the famous city of Thebes, which is modern-day Luxor. Then in 1905, after an incident between Egyptian site guards and a group of French tourists, Carter decided to resign from the Antiquities Service, and he lived in Luxor for several years, painting and selling watercolors to tourists. But Carter's career would return to archaeology in 1907, when he was hired by British aristocrat Lord Carnarvon to supervise the excavation of several tombs near the Valley of the Kings, where he had previously worked for several years. Another colleague had discovered several artifacts that intrigued Carter. There were some embalming linen and other items that had an inscription on them that led Carter to believe that there could be another tomb of a king nearby. But the previous team who discovered these artifacts were confident that there was nothing more to be found in the Valley of the Kings, and they strongly urged Carter to abandon his quest. Well, unfazed by the skepticism of others, Carter proceeded to apply for a permit to dig in the Valley of the Kings. The excavation permit was awarded to Carter and Carnarvon in 1914, but due to the outbreak of World War I, Carter was not able to launch a full-scale exploration of the area until the end of 1917. And so Carter and his team divided up the site into a grid and meticulously began to search the area. And Carter and his team began to scour the rocky landscape that was scarred with the trenches of many previous digs. After several years, almost the whole area had been systematically investigated, and the discoveries were minimal. However, there was a small area left that was unexplored, near the ancient builders' huts at the temple of the tomb of Ramesses VI. But by this time, Carnarvon was disappointed at the lack of finding anything significant. And that year, in 1922, Carnarvon informed Carter that he was not going to continue financing the work any longer. In response, Carter pleaded with Carnarvon to allow him to continue because he knew something must be there. Moved by Carter's passion and determination, Carnarvon agreed to fund one last season for Carter and his team. And so Carter and his team resumed their final season of digging in the Valley of the Kings on November 1st, 1922. The team began digging in the last sector of the grid that had not been investigated near the entrance to the tomb of Rameses VI. 3 days later, on November 4th, to everyone's surprise, Carter's team discovered some steps under the builders' huts. It had only been a few days, but Carter was sure that they had discovered something big. And so he sent a message to Carnarvon saying, "At last, have made a wonderful discovery in Valley, a magnificent tomb with seals intact." And he urged Lord Carnarvon to come to Egypt at once. On November 26th, in 1922, Carter and his team opened the wall to the antechamber of the tomb with Lord Carnarvon present. As Carter entered the chamber, Carnarvon excitedly called out and asked whether Carter could see anything. Carter responded with these famous words, "Yes, wonderful things, wonderful things." It was not too long after that that Carter and his team were certain that they had discovered the tomb of King Tutankhamun, commonly known as King Tut. This was the name inscribed on the burial linen and artifacts that had been previously discovered in the valley that led Carter to continue searching. Carter and his team had discovered the tomb of the obscure boy king who reigned for only 9 years in the mid-14th century BC. But because the tomb had remained hidden for over 3,000 years with all the treasures and burial items untouched, since it had not been plundered by grave robbers, King Tut quickly became the most famous Egyptian pharaoh, and his tomb yielded more treasures than any other that has been discovered. There was gold everywhere, and magnificent jewelry, and all the finest items from the royal treasury lining the tomb. It took Carter nearly 10 years to carefully catalog and preserve the thousands of artifacts discovered in the tomb, most of which are on display today in the Egyptian Museum in Cairo. What we can learn from the example of Howard Carter is how he demonstrated such unwavering tenacity and unwillingness to give up his search for what he believed was still to be discovered in the Valley of the Kings. He spent years of his life scouring the area in a very careful and methodical way so as to not miss anything. His persistence and dedication in seeking for the tomb of King Tutankhamun is both quite admirable and inspiring. We should all have that sort of attitude and indomitable spirit toward wisdom, to have an unquenchable desire and resolute steadfastness to continue our search. The encouragement that we receive in Proverbs chapter 2, verse 4, is that if we will look for wisdom as we would for hidden treasure, and if we will seek for her like we would for silver or gold, then we will discover the true treasure of wisdom, and we will come to understand the fear of Yahweh and the knowledge of God. We must heed this admonition because great treasure is rarely found easily. Therefore, we must go after wisdom and be relentless in our pursuit of it. One important encouragement that we can carry with us in life is that if we will seek and search, wisdom can be found. She is not hiding like a tomb in the ground, but is waiting for us to call out to her and receive the understanding and discernment that she offers for how we are to live life properly and in relationship with and under the rule of Yahweh our God. This is the wisdom of the proverb.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Words of Wisdom podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, we would be so appreciative if you would share this podcast with your friends. And if you have been blessed by this work, please consider supporting the podcast by clicking on the donation link in the description.